So holding on Hayam and Bays, second line of the wide lines. Gufa, the Gemara says, getting back to something that we learned yesterday. We said Chizkiyah Kori B'Tveria Ba'Beiser V'Chameiser. The Chizkiyah read in the Megillah in Tveria on the 14th and 15th of Adar, because in Sapkalei Mukevus Kamei Mais Yeshua Ben Nun Hiiloi. Because he had a suffix whether it's a city surrounded by a wall from the time of Yeshua. We said yesterday that Rebbe was certain of it, but Chizkiyah in the next generation already had a suffix about it. Question is, when we Misakalei Milta the Tveria, how could he have a suffix about Tveria? Voxiv, there's a pasuk in Sefer Yeshua where it lists the cities and the territories of the various Shvatim. There's a pasuk there that lists a number of the cities in the territory of Naphtali. The expression is Va'are Mifzar, the fortified cities, which means they're walled, are Hatzidim, Ser, Vachamas, Rakas V'Kineres. The five cities, V'Kaimelon, and we know for a fact, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon, Rakas Zutveria. That the Rakas from the times of Yeshua is where later on the city of Tveria was built. So therefore, even though, like we said yesterday, the city itself, the city of Tveria as we know it was built only towards the end of the second Beis Hamikdash, long after Yeshua, but it was built in a place where previously there had been a walled city named Rakas. We're saying the same place. It has to be, or at least it would have to be within a mil of it, whatever. So what kind of suffix does Chizkiyah have? The answer is Heine time of the Misakulay. The reason he has a suffix is as follows: Mishum dechad yisa shura the yamahavas, because one side Tveria is by the Kinneret, so not all four sides of the city are walled. One side there's no wall. The water is the wall there. It's surrounded by a wall on all the landward sides, and then there's no water. Then there's no wall facing the water.
Anyone who's crossing the Kinneret by ship could invade the city then.
Well, I mean, they probably built like a small seawall or something to, but they don't have a full fledged wall over there.
You know that?
Also,
it's not so easy still to go by.
It's not so easy to invade by ship either. Yeah. So then, in that case, we might ask back, well, in that case, why did he have a suffix in reverse? Then, on the contrary, for sure, that's not considered a wall. To Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Again, because the Gemara is going to assume now that the dinim of what's considered a walled city, as far as the Megillah reading, is the same as what's considered a walled city, as far as the dinim of Batei Arichaima. And Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. When the pasuk says Ashaloi Chaima, that the city has a wall, means Veloi Shur Iger. It has to have an actual wall, not just a wall. Shur means a wall of Iger, of roofs. In other words, you can't just have that around the city. There's like row houses, like we have here in Brooklyn, where you have a solid row of houses or a solid row of roofs making up a wall. No, there has to be an actual wall. Yes, there has to be an actual wall separate from the houses. Actually, maybe not separate from the houses. Actually, it's machlokas tanaim over there in the Mishnah. If you have houses built into the wall, but you have to have some kind of wall at any rate. And when it continues, Saviv, when the pasuk continues that the city has a wall around, Prat l'Tveria, this is as opposed to Tveria, Shiyama Chaimasa, where the sea is the wall on one side. So there's no question that's not considered a walled city. Why does Chizkiyah even have a suffix? On Heilin Bay, towards the bottom. The answer is Lenin, Bote Erechaima, Lemisakala. When it comes to Bote Erechaima, of course he has no doubt, right? The Braita clearly says that it's not considered a walled city as far as those halachas. What does he have a suffix as far as reading the Megillah? So we had the other day, actually, we had Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had mentioned a din about walled cities, that if it had a wall once and it doesn't have a wall anymore, we said that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi there was talking about the difference between whether the city was first settled and then surrounded with a wall, that's not considered a walled city, versus the other way around. And we said there, Rashi says that actually he's talking about the din of Batei Arichaima. But other Mepharshim had said that he's actually, that Tosfos had said that actually he's talking about the dinim of Megillah. Which means, in other words, according to Tosfos, it comes out, he's equating the halachas of a walled city for that purpose and the halachas of Megillah. Putting that together with our Gemara over here, you would have to say that Rabbi Shimon Levi, according to that exclamation, is arguing with our Gemara over here. Because the Gemara here is saying that there is a difference between them.
Between the
dinim of a walled city as far as the dinim of houses versus a walled city as far as the dinim of a Megillah. You can have something, in other words, which is what the Gemara is saying, that which is definitely, which is, you can have a city like Tveria, which is not a walled city as far as the Dinim of Bate Arechaima, but it may be, or might or might not be, as far as the Dinim of Megillah.
What are the Dinim, general Dinim of Bate Arechaima?
We talked about it before. The idea that no, that you when you sell a house in such a city, you have 1 year to buy it back, and if you don't, then that's it. It's a goner. You don't get it back in your life. Yeah. So he comes a sapula in mikra megillah. So he has a suffix only when it comes to reading the megillah. My prosim, my mokaf, b'stivi gavi mikra megillah. What does it mean when the megillah says that there's a difference between unwalled and walled cities? Prosim mean open cities versus mokafim. So what is it? What's the reason? What's the underlying reason for the distinction? Is it mishum dahani miglu vahani loy miglu? Is it because an unwalled city is visible to everybody? You can see into the city, so like there's no place to hide really. Well, in that case, Tveria is vanami megalia. Well, in that case, Tveria is also visible. You can be coming from the Kinneret side. You can see everything in the city because there's no wall. That's what we're asking. What's the key thing? What's the key difference between a walled city and an unwalled city? Is it that you can see everything that's going on in the city? If you can see everything in the city, it's not considered walled. In that case, Tveria, if you're boating on the Kinneret, you will see everything in Tveria. Or maybe the key difference is that in a walled city is protected, an unwalled city is not. Well, Vahanami Meganya, where Tveria then is protected, because they do have the sea protecting them on the one side. Mishumachim Isakalei, that is why he has the suffix. And we talked the other day about the Shitta of Ramban, about why there's the difference between the regular and the walled cities as far as the dates, the 14th versus the 15th. Again, where he said that the idea was the Jews in walled cities in Eretz Yisrael had no reason to fear for their lives in the first place. These are old Jewish cities, or mostly Jewish cities, and they're surrounded by a wall. They're protected from their enemies. Only in the unwalled cities, in Eretz Yisrael and other parts of the empire. So then, in that case, this Gemara goes very nicely according to the Ramban's explanation. Is it that they felt safe in any city which is surrounded with a wall on all sides, so nobody can invade? In that case, then Tveria is the same thing. Nobody can easily invade it because they're protected on one side by the sea. Or is it that they felt safe in the walled cities because they were able to find hiding places and nobody from the outside is going to know where those hiding places are? As opposed to a city like Tveria, you can be standing, you can be on a boat in the Kinneret, and you can see into the city. You can see everything that's going on over there. So that's the question. Would the Jews in Tveria, or Rakas as it was called then, have felt safe enough that they wouldn't have felt the need to celebrate Purim in the first place until Mordechai and the Sanhedrin told them that they have to?
To me, that trying to extend and stretch the definition of wall is going beyond what Mishnah says. Wall is wall. Period.
That's the question. That's the question. What's the key thing what's the key thing about a walled city?
The presence of a wall.
Okay, but then in that case, can the sea be considered a wall for that purpose? In a certain sense, it can, because you can't easily invade from that side.
But you can, even though you cannot easily invade, it doesn't mean that it's because there's a wall. It
doesn't matter, though. That's the point. If we're saying that the key thing about a walled city is not so much that it has physical walls, but that it has it's more impervious to being attacked. Well, in Tveria is like that also.
Is that the meaning of a common meaning could mean protection?
Well, that's what we're asking over here. But in the Megillah, it never uses the word chayma. The Megillah uses the word prazim, which means open. So that's the question. In what sense does a city have to be open? Open to view or open to attack, basically?
That's human, right?
Yes. Another case, the Gemara says, Rav Asi Kodim Megillah Behutzal Ba'al
Be'en. Is really the initiation of the
case. Yeah. So that's the thing. We're coming at it from two different ways. In the case of the Bate Are Chayma, the Pasuk uses the word Chayma. So fine, as long and because the Torah uses the extra word Saviv, we learn that the wall actually has to surround it on all sides. In the Megillah, it never uses the word Chayma, and it never uses the word Saviv. So all we have is to determine whether this kind of city is considered Prazim or not. Another case, the Gemara says, Rav Asi Kore Megillah Behutzal Ba'abeso V'chameser. Rav Asi read the Megillah in Hutzal on the 14th and 15th. Same reason. Because again, he had a suffix whether it's surrounded by a wall from the time of Yeshua or not. Ikad Amar, there's another version, not Amar Avasi, Hai Hutzel, the Beis Binyamin, Mukhafat Chaimim Meit Yeshua'i. According to the second version, Avasi said it's definite that Hutzel of Shevet Binyamin, a city of that name in the territory of Shevet Binyamin, is definitely walled from the times of Yeshua, even though it's not mentioned in the circuit.
Walled completely?
Okay, yeah. Two things that Mephoshim discuss about this. First of all, we talked about the question the other day, does this din that you read Megillah on the 15th in cities that are walled, Mimos Yeshua Ben Nun, does that apply only to cities in Eretz Yisrael or even to cities in Chutzlar? Right? Both sides bring proofs from this Gemara over here. On the one hand, we're mentioning Hutzel, which in many places the Gemara mentions as being a city in Bavel, so then that would imply, the halacha implies, even to cities in Bavel. On the other hand, the other Rishonim who learn that it only applies to cities in Eretz Yisrael, they say the Hutzel in the second sentence of Ravasi in the second version is the same Hutzel as the first one. The second one is clearly one from Shevet Binyamin in Eretz Yisrael. So the first one, that he's according to the first version, is the same city also in Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to any place else in the world. Yeah. That's true. The other question Mepharshim discussed is why. So, what? According to the first version, that he's saying it's a suffix. I mean, so you could say that about any place in the world. You could say that New York is a suffix, whether it's Mukuf Chaimim Meit Yeshua Ben Nun. You could say about almost any place in the world. Why? And yet we don't see that. Therefore, they make a distinction between. It's not that he had a suffix whether the city was walled. He knows the city was walled. He's not sure whether the city is still located in the same place it was before. There's a number of cities in Eretz Yisrael where they have a suffix like that today. Chevron is one of them. Yeah. Chevron, Shechem. Akko, there's a bunch of cities where we're not certain that the modern city is in the same. Be'er Sheva is another one where we're not certain that the modern city is in exactly the same place as the old one.
Is it like Hebron and Shem? Is that the exact location of where the city was? Or
that's what we're asking.
Don't we know, where the
Cave
of the Patriarchs is?
Sure, but the pasuk says that was al pnei Chevron, right? That was in front of Chevron, not in it, whereas nowadays it's in the middle of the city. So because of that, and some of these, in many of those cities, in Eretz Yisrael, they read on the 14th with a bracha and on the 15th without. But in places where you have no particular reason to assume that it was ever walled in times of Yeshua, then you're like a killer. You don't get yourself into a suffix in the first place. Purim is the 14th period.
And Yerushalayim, we know, was walled in days
before. Very clearly, the pasuk says that the Jews weren't able to conquer it, but they knew that it had walls.
Because of the
Yerushalayim. Whatever the exact reason is, they couldn't conquer it, but whatever, they knew it had walls. Yeah.
They found it perfect.
Yeah. Okay. There are a couple of Sfarim, and many years ago, someone pointed out to me, and afterwards I've seen various other references to it, that there are poskim who talk about a number of major cities in Chutzlar where they used to read on the 15th, either definitely or at least Mitzvah HaSafek. Baghdad was one example. Prague was another. Krakow. There were a couple of European cities. Strasbourg, really? I didn't know that. Okay. So there is this concept, there may have been Central European cities that actually existed, that actually there was some kind of settlement there all the way back in the time of Yeshua, and that had a war. And they
France had a summer at the time of Yeshua.
That's according to that way of looking at it, possibly, yeah. Amr of Yechanan. Speaking of, we were talking about the identification of Tveria. We said that Tveria is Rakas. But Amr of Yechanan, Ki Avina Talia, when I was a young boy, Amina Milsa, the She'ina Lasavia, I said a certain statement. I asked the elders, the older people of Tveria, about this, about what I thought, which city in Tanakh Tveria can be identified with. The Ishtakach Kavati, and it turned out like what I said. They agreed with me, in other words. Namely as follows. Of that list of cities that we said before, from Shevet Naphtali, we said, Hatsidim Tser V'Hamas Rekas V'Kinneret. So Hatsidim and Seir, the Gemara is leaving unidentified. But namely as follows. Hamas Zut Tveria. The city, Hamas there, is what we call nowadays Tveria. V'loma nikrashma Hamas, Hashem Chama Tveria. It's called that because of the hot spring in the Tveria. Hamas meaning hot. Next, Rakas Zut Tziporri, the city of Rakas mentioned over there, is Tziporri, which is near Tveria. V'loma nikrashma Rakas, mishum de medalia ki raksa denara. Why is it called Rakas? Because it's raised up like the bank of a river. Raksa is the Aramaic word for the bank of a river. The bank of a river is higher than the river itself. Same way, Tziporri was on top of a mountain, So therefore, it's higher than the surrounding area.
Like the bank.
Yes. So therefore, it's called Raka. And Kineret Zuginoisa, the last one on the list that says there, Kineret, is Ginoisar, is an area there, a town over there by the banks of the Kineret. Veloma Nikrashma Kineret, the Mesiki Pera the Kakala the Kinri, because the fruit of it is as sweet as the sound of a kinner, of a harp or a violin or whatever. The Aruch has a different girsa, that not Pera, but the Mesiki Kakala, not Kakala rather, the Mesiki Pera the Kinri. That the fruit is as sweet as the fruit of any tree over there is as sweet as the fruit of a kinri, which is a kind of tree that produces very sweet fruit. So therefore, yeah, according to that second explanation. Yeah. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it comes out when we said before that Rakas is Tveria, no, Chamas is Tveria, Rakas is Tveria.
You couldn't have two names?
No, because the Pasuk is listing, it's trying to list all the cities in Sheva and Naphtali. There's no reason why it would list one city with two names. Besides, at the end of each list over there, it gives a total. It lists the cities, and then it says, you know, Arim X number of Hasrayan. So yeah. However, Omar Rava Miiklamando Omar Rakas La Tveria. You're telling me, how could anybody possibly say that Rakas is not Tveria? V'haki Shachiv Inish Chacha. But we know that when a great person, a Talmid Chacham, passes away here in Bavel, Hasam Safdile, then over there in Tveria, which at that time was the center of the Jewish settlements in Eretz Yisrael, where they had the Sanhedrin and the central yeshiva and all, so they would make a hesped for him, Hachi. Godol hu b'sheshach, this person was great in Sheshach. Sheshach is a nickname for Bavel. We find it a couple of times in Sefer Yirmiyah, it's actually the word Bavel in Atbash. The bases become a shin, and the lamed becomes a chaf. So the Bavel equals Sheshach. So this person was great in Sheshach, v'shem loy b'rakas, but he has a name, he's famous in Rakas, among the Talmid Chachamim, in Rakas, in Tveria. So there's one proof that Rakas means Tveria.
How do we know that this Rakas?
Because we're talking, they would do this kind of hesped in Tveria. At that time, the center, I mean, they had a Jewish community in Sephardi, but the central Jewish community of that period in that place was Tveria. And v'chimasi aroin alahasam, another case, when they bring up somebody's aroin from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, safti lahachid, then they make a hesped for him as follows, oyavei sridim, those who love the sridim, you who love the sridim, Rashi says that sridim is a nickname for the Jewish people, because the pasuk in Yirmiyah says, am sridei charev, the Jewish people who are the fugitives, the leftovers from the sword. Marsha explains a little bit differently. We find a different pasuk. The Gemara mentions in a different place, "Sridim Asher Hashem Kodeh," that Sridim means Talmid Chachamim. So therefore, Oyavei Sridim means Jews who love Talmid Chachamim. Anyway, there's a calling on them. Whoever you who love the Jewish people, or you who love the Talmid Chachamim, Yoshvei Rakas, you who live in Rakas, Se'uva Kablu Haruga Oimek, come out and receive and welcome those who were killed in the depths. Killed in the sense like, you know, they didn't have the schut to come to Eretz Yisrael. They ended up dying in Chutz La'aretz. And Oimek, because Bavel is low-lying. We learned from Tainus. Bavel is low-lying and swampy compared to Eretz Yisrael. So again, we see in the test, but they mention Rakas, and they mean Tveria. And a third example, Kinoch Napshe de Rabzera, when Rabzera passed away. Now, Rabzera was born in Bavel, and he grew up there originally. Then, in the middle of his life, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. This is the famous story where he fasted 40 fasts or 100 fasts, whatever it is, in order to forget the Talmud Bavli, so he'd be able to learn the Talmud Yerushalmi. So, when he passed away, Pasach Alayahu Safdana, a certain person who was giving a hesped, started his hesped as follows. He says, Eretz Shinar Haraviyoda, the land of Shinar, which is Bavel, Bavel, Erech, etc. Be'eretz Shinar, it says in Parshas Noach. So the land of Shinar, Harav Yolda, became pregnant and gave birth. Eretz Tzvi Gidla Shashuera, and then the beautiful land, Eretz Tzvi literally means the land of the deer. The Gemara explains in a few places why Eretz Israel was like a deer. Yeah. Gidla Shashuera raised the precious thing from Bavel. In other words, this precious Talmid Chacham came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael and grew and continued growing in Eretz Yisrael. Oy no lo, omor Rakas. Now woe is to her now. Rakas should say ki ogra klei chamdasa, because it's lost its precious keli. So again, we see from this one also that Rakas is Tveria.
The
precious keli, meaning the Talmid Chacham.
So Marsha explains the reason why we mentioned three different kinds of espedim is because he had the three different possible cases. One where the person lived his whole life in Bavel and never makes it to Eretz Yisrael at all and doesn't even get buried in Bavel. Two, where he passes away in Bavel and his brought to Eretz Yisrael to be buried there. And three, where he actually moves to Eretz Yisrael like Rav Zera did. So in each of these cases, we see that they call Tveria Rakas. So there's no question, Tveria, there's no question, Rakas from the Pasuk is what we call Tveria nowadays. So how could Rabbi Yochanan be saying that? No, Hamas is Tveria. Ela Omer Rabba or Rava? No, it's like this. Hamas Zuchamigror, when the Pasuk lists over there the cities of Naphtali and it mentions Hamas, this is actually not Tveria, but another city that has hot springs nearby. Zuchamigror. Or actually, there's a place near Tveria nowadays called Hamat Geder that has hot springs. So it could be that the Gemara over here should be Geder, not Gror. Whatever it is, so that can be called Hamas because of the hot springs. It's nearby. It's a couple miles away from Tveria. It's a few miles from the border with Jordan nowadays.
So we'll do some research on these different things.
Okay. Have fun. I went to Hamat Gra, actually. It's a great place. Yeah. Anyway. Rakas. Yeah. Hamat Geder, they call it now, yeah. Hamat Geder, yeah. Rakas du Tveria. Rakas, like we just said, like we brought proofs from all these Hespedim, is Tveria. And Kineres du Vinoisar. And yes, like Rabbi Yochanan said, Kineres is the city of, is what we call nowadays the city of Vinoisar. Okay, well then, Veloma Niklashmo Rakas. So why is Tveria called Rakas then? Because even the empty people in Tveria are as full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate. So the name of it in the times of Tanakh was not Hamas, not like Rabbi Yochanan today, but rather the name of it in the times of Tanakh was Rakas. Later on, the city was built over there and it was called Tveria after Tiberius Caesar. But why was the original name Rakas? Because even the empty people in it are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. Now, Mephoroshim asks, why the Turei Evan asks, why at this Tveria? I mean, the same is true generically of the Jewish people, or at least you want to say more generally the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, but why are we singling out Tveria? There's a lot of different interesting answers. One of them is the Chidah says, because we find in Shabbos, the Gemara mentioned, because Tveria was, still is, very low-lying and there are mountains directly to the west of it, therefore, the sun sets for them very early. A lot earlier than it would if there weren't the mountains over there.
To the east?
No, to the west of them there are mountains. To the east of them is the Kinneret. So therefore, the sun sets behind the mountains much earlier than it otherwise would if there were flat land over there. So because of that, in Tveria, they take Shabbos in very early, relatively speaking.
The mountains are beyond the Kinneret.
The Kinneret is here, Tveria is here, the mountains are here. So when the sun sets in the west, it's setting behind the mountains. It rises over the Kinneret, it sets over the mountains in over the Galil. So therefore they take in Shabbos and Tveria very early. And the Gemara says in Shabbos that if somebody keeps Shabbos properly, even if he has, the expression the Gemara is over there is even if the person, even if you have a generation where they're worshipping of a Zorah like they did in the time of Enosh, nevertheless their Averis are forgiven. So therefore, even the Pasha the Jews of Tveria have the schus of taking in Shabbos early, and therefore they're Malay and Mitzvah Kirim.
When the candle...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they do nowadays. There's another explanation that they say, because the Gemara mentions also in Shabbos that where did Be'er Shemiriam end up after the 40 years when the Jewish people spent in the desert? Be'er Shemiriam ended up in the Kinneret. The people of Tveria drink water. That's their water supply, is the Kinneret. They're drinking from Be'er Shel Miriam. Therefore, that gives them the extra oomph to be able to do mitzvahs. Yeah. Yeah.
That gives you a lot of extra das.
Okay, that too, yeah.
What?
It gives you a lot of extra das.
The
water from Be'er Shel Miriam, yeah.
The story of Arizal, that he takes
Heimbreit Hall
to a certain place in the
Canary. He gives him to drink, and it turns out to be water. Yeah, I think I heard that story, yeah. Now, there's also an idea that's brought, I think, in Shulchan Aruch, that's a good idea to drink water on Matzah Shabbos, because the Be'er Shel Miriam travels around from place to place. Matzah Shabbos, you may end up with water that came from it.
But I've also heard that it's not a good idea to, right before, when you would do Shalshus to get the for the water during that period of time? Because that
that's a different thing, because then you're taking it away from the Shamus and Gehenim. Yeah, we'll talk about that some other time, because we have a lot of ground to cover. So all right. Rabbi Yumi Omer Rakas Shmo. Rabbi Yumi also agrees that the original name of Tveria is Rakas. V'lama Nikra Shmo Tveria. So on the contrary, why do we call it Tveria? Now, of course, the Gemara knew very well it was originally called Tveria after Tiberius Caesar. But the question is, first of all, Caesar is long dead. Even after the Romans are gone, we still call it that. Why? And why b'chol are we naming a city in Eretz Yisrael after a guy? So he says there has to be a deeper reason for it. Yeah, maybe. Why not? There's a number of places in Eretz Yisrael that in Roman times were known by Goyish names, and then afterwards they took back their Jewish names. So why is it called Tveria? Sheyeshevus b'tabura shel Eretz Yisrael, because it sits in the tabur in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Now, in what sense is Tveria in the north? In the middle of Eretz Yisrael? It's up in the north. It's up in the Galil. So the Kaftor of Aferach explains: if you measure the borders of Eretz Yisrael that it gives in Parshas Maaseh, all the way from Hor Har Har in the north, all the way to Nachal Mitzrayim in the south, Tveria is approximately in the middle of that. So therefore, it can be called that it's b'tabura shel Eretz Yisrael. A third possibility, Rava Omer, Rabba Omer, Rakas Shema, the real name of it again is Rakas, V'lama Nikra Shema Tveria, Shetova Re'iyasa. Why is it called Tveria? Because the sites of it are good. Tosfos says that means because they had gardens and orchards and whatever there. It's a nice place to see. Marsha says differently. Since the Sanhedrin was the last place, we learned in Rosh Hashanah the Sanhedrin was Goyla from one place to another, and they finally wound up in Tveria. And in Mashiach's time, the Sanhedrin will first be reestablished in Tveria, and from there go to Yerushalayim. So Tovariyot, it's a good place to see. You have a good site over there, the site of the Chachamim sitting and learning Torah. Another one, Omer Zeira. Since we're talking about the identification of cities in Eretz Yisrael, so Zeira says another one. Kitroin Zutziporti. The pasuk mentions among the cities of Zvulun, of Shevet Zvulun now. Till now we were talking about Naphtali. Now we're turning to Zvulun. So Zvulun had a city named Kitroin. This is the city. This is what we call the city of Tziporti, which is right near Tveria. V'lama Nikra Shmo Tziporti, why is we called Tziporti? Sheyeshevus b'rosh har k'tzipor, because it sits on top of a mountain like a bird sitting high up on a tree. Because again, like we said, Tziporti is up on top of a mountain. Master Kitron Tziporti, you're telling me that Kitron is actually Tziporti? How could that be? V'ar Kitron b'chalka shel Zvulun havoi. We know that Kitron was one of the cities in the portion of Zvulun. D'chtiv Zvulun lo'heresh et yoshve Kitron v'et yoshve Nahalol. The pasuk in the second half of the first parak of Shoftim lists for almost every one of the Shvatim a number of cities that they failed to conquer. They let the Knanim stay over there. You'll pay us taxes, you'll pay us tribute and whatever, and the pasuk criticizes them for that. You're not loisachayah kol neshama. You're not supposed to be leaving any goyim over there. But for almost every one of the Shvatim, the Pasuk lists several cities that they didn't. And for Zvulun, it mentions Kitron and Nahalol, so we see Kitron belonged to Zvulun. And we also know Zvulun Mitzrayim Amidot Sabhava. We also know that Zvulun was complaining about the portion that he was given in Eretz Yisrael. Shenema, the Pasuk says in Devorah Shira, the Aftarah B'Shalach, Zvulun Am Cheref Nach Shalomus. Zvulun is a people that scorns their soul, meaning their life, to the point of wanting to die. And why is that? Matam Mishum de Naphtali Amirei Mesadeh. Because the whole Pasuk goes, Zvulun Am Cheref Nach Shalomus, V'Naphtali Amirei Mesadeh. Now, I mean, in context, what the Pasuk means is that the Pasuk is praising Zvulun and Naphtali, that people from those Shvatim went to and joined in the fight against Sisera and Yavin Melech Knan and that whole story over there under Devorah and Barak. But Marsha points out, I mean, the fact is, Naphtali Amarei Mesadeh doesn't tell us any praise about them. Naphtali on the heights of their fields. What about them? What do they do on the heights of those fields? Therefore, the Gemara is understanding the Pasuk in a different sense, that it's telling us when Shevet Zvulun was engaged in this battle, and they came into Naphtali's territory, because that's where the battle took place, or that's where they originally gathered in the first place, on Har Tavor, which is on the border of Naphtali, all of a sudden Shevet Zvulun sees, hey, you know what? Shevet Naphtali and the other Shvatim around here have a different kind of land than I do. And they became jealous. Naphtali, basically, in modern terms, basically, Naphtali had the lower Galil, the area closer to the Kinneret, closer to Lake Chula or whatever's left of it. Zvulun had more the upper Galil. That's why we mentioned that Tziporti, for example. And so, what they had the upper Galil, and then going all the way to the ocean, all the Yachos Al Tzida, in the pasuk says. So what happened? Omer zvulun lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ribono Shel Olam. La'achai nasata lehem sodot zekrumim. My brothers, you gave them fields and vineyards. V'li nasata harim ugvois. Me, you gave hills and mountains and hills. What am I supposed to do with those? They're not as good for farming. La'achai nasata lehem arotzeis. My brothers, you gave them land. You gave them actual dry land. V'li nasata yamim and ahoris. Me, you gave seas and rivers. Because that's the Zvulun portion of Eretz Yisrael, as it includes the part of the Mediterranean, the shore of the Mediterranean, a number of little rivers that flow into it, whatever.
I didn't know that there was so much gas on
there. Yeah, indeed. Well, so the Eibishter tells him there's other things to exploit over there, yeah. The Eibishter tells him, don't worry, Kulan Tzrichim L'chai De'Chilazin. All the other Shvatim are going to need you for the Chilazin. Which he makes chaylets from. They need it for tzitzis. They're going to need it for any other purpose that they want blue wool for. Shenema, the pasuk says, Amim how you grow. The pasuk says the nations will call at the mountains, meaning they'll come to your mountains. Why? Because the pasuk finishes the whole pasuk Amim how you grow. Kisham yizbechuz v'chetedek. Kishefa yamim yinoku utzfune tmune chol. So what does that mean? Tani Rav Yosef. Sfune zechilozim. The word sfune, which means Rashi says over here, safun means important. So that refers to the chilazim. Although on the pasuk over there, actually, Rashi says a little differently, that sofon means hidden. Anyway, so that refers to the chilazim. Tmune zutris, when it says tmune, things that are hidden, means tris, which Rashi says means tuna fish. So it's a very important, a very commercially important kind of fish. Everybody's going to be coming to shave its woolen to buy that. And chol, when it says sand, zus chuches levana. This means sand, it means high quality sand, the kind that you can make clear glass out of, which in those times is a very rare, expensive thing. So, well, nowadays clear glass is easily, actually the Yerushalmi says that this was a special kind of glass too. It was bendable, so something more like plastic actually. But it wasn't plastic, it was actually made, yeah, whatever it was, but yeah, so therefore the Eibishter is telling Zvulun, don't worry, you think you got a worse part of Eretz Yisrael, don't worry, you have natural resources, not forget about the oil maybe, but you have natural resources that everybody else in Eretz Yisrael is going to need. Zvulun answers back, who's going to tell me? What happens, for example, if people come into my territory and steal it? They take chalazin without telling me. Marshall says, he's not choshed that other Jews are going to steal. But for example, you have, we know that chelos is a very rare, expensive thing. The Gemara talks in a few places about the possibility that you can use color ilan instead, that you can use indigo, which is much cheaper, and actually you're not allowed to for tzitzis, but for other purposes, people might end up using that. So what happens if they end up using that? Amalei, Eibishter tells him, don't worry. As the middle part of the pasuk that we didn't quote before, said, Shom yizbechu zivchei tzedek, there they will bring karbonos of righteousness. Meaning, just like when it comes to bringing a carbon, it can't be from stealing. The same thing. It's guaranteed. What you make your panos out of is not going to. There's not going to be any problem with stealing with it either. Because simon zeyehelach, you can have the following simon: kolam notum imchab lodomim. Anybody who takes anything from you without paying for it, enimo v'prakmata shloy klum. It's not going to help his business any. He's going to end up losing out of the deal. So therefore, yes, you're guaranteed an income from these things. Now, the Isak Daidach Kitran Zutzipori. Now, going back to where had we get into this? Because we were trying to say that one of Zvulun's cities is Tzipori. If Tzipori is one of Zvulun's cities, am I Mr. I'm Amadosa? Then why is he so upset about the part of Eretz Yisrael? V'ahabi Tzipori milsed adifa tuba. Tzipori is a very good part of Eretz Yisrael. So, okay, you might say, okay, well, maybe Tzipori is not as good. It doesn't have the whole Eretz Yisrael of Zavach Cholavit Vash. Maybe Tzipori doesn't have that in that area. How is the country Zavach Cholavit Vash? Rashi says, of course, quoting from Gemara at the end of Ksubas, that the goats eat the dates. The honey drips out of the dates because they're so juicy and succulent, and the milk flows out of the goat's udders and mixes on the ground, so you have rivers of milk and honey flowing on the ground there. And you might mention in Ksubas that one of the Amoraim, actually it was Romi by Yechezkel, actually one time saw that. So if it was what? Zavas Kol over that. The goats eat the dates, the juice, the honey drips out of the dates and then goes on the floor, and it mixes with the milk coming out of the goat. Yeah. So you're telling me maybe Tzipori doesn't have that. can't be. Rav Shlokesh says, I personally saw the Zavas Kolob Advash area of Tzipori. It was a large area, 16 by 16 mil. A mil is about a kilometer, about 6 tenths of a mile. So you're talking about 10 by 10 miles. Big area. Okay, maybe you'll say, okay, maybe fine. Tzipori has Zavas Kolob Advash. Maybe not. Maybe less than other parts of Eretz Yisrael. Maybe other parts of Eretz Yisrael are richer. Still can't be. I saw the Zavas Chol of Dvash, Rabbi Baba Chana says, of the whole Eretz Yisrael, a little here, a little there. But when you add it all up, it was the distance, like we have, like from between two places in Bavel, he uses them as signposts, from Beit Kuvi until the port of Tobakni, which is Esther in the Tower to Paris the Urka, 22 parasa in length, which is 88 mil. About 50 miles, or Pusya Shita Parasi, and six parasa wide. Ben Yayada says, why 22 and 6? Because they have this in the Schos of learning Torah. 22 representing the 22 letters of the Aleph for Torah Shabbat, and 6 representing the Sisha Sidri Mishnah for Torah Shabbat Peh. Therefore, 22 by 6. Anyway, now, if you figure out, if you run the numbers, then it comes out. If you run the numbers, the whole Eretz Yisrael, we're saying the Zavas Kol of Advash is 88 by 24 mil. Zvulun's portion of that is 16 by 16 mil. It comes out. He has a larger proportion than everybody else. He has about 1/8 of all the Zavas Kol of Advash in Eretz Yisrael. There's 9.5 Shvatim that inherited on that side of the Yarden. So again, if Tzipori is one of the cities, why is he complaining? The answer is Afilah Hachi Sada Sukrum Nadivale. True, but even with all of that, Zvulun was still saying we would prefer to have actual fields and vineyards. Very nice, the Zavas Chol of Advash, very nice, we have the Tris, etc. But we still, right side of a Kav Shaloi. A person wants his own Kav that he grew in his own field, Metisha Kav and Shachaveri. And therefore they were complaining. Dekanami, the Gemara says, we can see that actually from the words of the Pasuk. Dichtiv Naftali al Meroi Me Sada. Because what was Zvulun complaining about? That Naftali is on the heights of the field, meaning that they have actual fields. So yes, that's what Zvulun is complaining about. Fine, we have Zavas Chol of Advash, fine, we have all the good things, but we don't have actual fields. To call our own. Eventually, after the Abishah told him, after the Abishah told him, you have the Tris and Chukas Levana and whatever. I guess they reconciled themselves to it. Actually, I think as Ben Yoyada points out, it's not. I mean, Lachat Chila, Zvulun did like the fact that they're by the seashore. We had all the way back in Pesachim, we had that one time there was a guy who used to say, if I had a palace, I would build it by the seashore. Or Rashi's other explanation was even the little thorn bushes by the sea are as important as the big trees elsewhere. And they realized that he's from Shevet Zvulun. So Shevet Zvulun did like the fact that they have the sea. They just they were arguing they should have had fields and vineyards as well.
That's not right because the other Shakim didn't have the sea.
Some of them had sea coasts. Okay, I don't know.
Who had sea coasts?
Yehuda, Menashe, Don. More about Shemamina, so that proves it. More about identifying places in Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rabbo, there's a pasuk in the Navi Sanya, one of the Tirei Aser, that says the Ekroin Te'oker. Ekroin will be uprooted. Simple meaning is that Ekroin is the name of one of the cities of the Plishtim, roughly speaking, the Gaza Strip nowadays. But what is this Ekroin? Zu Kesari Bas Edom. This refers to Kesari, Caesarea, the daughter of Edom, meaning that it was founded and populated by Romans. Marsha points out, actually, that Kesari, the way it's spelt in the Gemara over here with only the second yod, is the same gematria as the word Okar, which means to be uprooted. So that's why the Gemara is associating it with Ekron.
What?
Yeah. Well, nowadays, Caesarea is basically just a bunch of Roman ruins, but if you're talking about the Gaza Strip, yeah, that's true. Shehiya Shevet Ben Acholos, this Kesari sits among the sands. It's on the sea. It's on the coast of Eretz Yisrael, so it's a very sandy area.
It's right on the sea.
Yeah. V'hi ha'yosit the Yisrael b'mei Yevonim. It was a peg stuck in the Jewish people's place in the time of the Yevonim. It was an enclave it was a Goyish enclave during the time when the Jews are settled in Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Second Mishmash. It was populated by Goyim, and they were harassing the Jews. So when Malchus Beis Chashmonai eventually became powerful and defeated them, they called it the Conquered Tower of Shir. There's a few different gusais over here. Instead of shir, one is that there, one is that actually it's meant to be sir, which because sir is besides referring to the city of Tyre, which is nowadays in Lebanon, it also refers to Rome. Another possibility is that the word is actually supposed to be shed because it's a tower that had shadim in it. In Goyesha histories and also in Josephus, it talks about that the place was originally called Strato's Tower after the name of a king or something who built it. So it could also be that it's shear or shed or whatever it is, like a shortened version of the name Strato. Megillah Tainus mentions that this happened on the 14th of Sivan. It's one of the Yom Tovim in Megillah Tainus, the day that they conquered this place. So later on, Hordus rebuilt the place and named it Caesarea, Caesarea. No, we're talking about the tower was abandoned, but later on, Hordus rebuilt the place. The ruins that you can see there when you visit it nowadays are from Hordus, and then later, yeah. Amr of Yesu Bachanin, in my dichtiv, what is it? There's another pasuk, the pasuk in Zechariah, v'hasiroisi domov lipiv, the pasuk says, I will take away his blood from his mouth, v'shikutzav liben shinov, and his disgusting things from between his teeth, v'nisha gamhu lelekenu, and it will also be left over for our Hashem. What does this mean? When it says I'll take away his blood from his mouth, this refers to the places where they have their bamya. Rashi says that bamya and galya, which is the next thing, are names of avodah zarah, or places where they worshipped avodah zarah. But shekutzav ben shinov zabeis galya shalahen. Venisha gamhu lelekenu. What's going to be left for Hashem? Elabotik nisias, the bottom medrash of Edom. This is the shuls and the bottom medrash in Edom. So the places of avodah zarah in Edom will be destroyed. What will be left for Hashem? Venisha gamhu lelekenu will be the places where they learned Torah and davened. That's why Haggai Tabach changes the first word Bamya to Karya, because he says that the Gemara mentions in the Avodah Zarah that here, when you have a place is named by an honorable name, like Bamya, high up, you should call it instead to Karya, which means low down, in order to make fun of Avodah Zarah. Even according to Rashi, though, it doesn't have to be necessarily that Bamya and Galya are the actual names of Avodah Zarah. Rashi just says Rashi Avodah Zarah Heim LaEdom, like the heads of Avodah Zarah. So maybe it's like the names of families, that whatever it is. Then the pasuk continues, V'hayu ka'aluf b'Yehuda, it will be like the aluf, like leader of Yehuda, in Yehuda, the ekrin ki Yevusi, and ekrin will be like the Yevusi. What does this mean? Elo taratirois v'kirkasois shebe'edoim. This refers to the taratirois and karkasios that are in Edoim. What are those? Tosfos says that those are places where they worship Avodah Zarah. Karkasios, for example, means a bathroom, so they're calling that as a shem gnai. And taratirois also is a shem gnai for a place they worship Avodah Zarah. Tosfos says, But the Aruch explains it differently. The Aruch explains Taratiyot for Kaukasai, is what it sounds like, theaters and circuses. Anyway, Sheba Edom, Shah Sidin, Sora Yehuda Lam Behen. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. I mean, sometimes they just had games over there, but yeah. So those, Shah Sidin, Sora Yehuda Lam Behen Torah Barabim. In the future, the leaders of Yehuda will teach Torah in them in public. So the word Aluf, in other words, has a double meaning. It means a leader, and it also means Meloshan Aluf Ochachma, I'll teach you. So it'll be a place of teaching. Tosfos, who says that these are places of Avodah Zarah, says, how is that possible? How do you have a place that was used for Avodah Zarah that's going to be used to teach Torah?
Like in the Bible.
Apparently, we're assuming that they weren't. And besides, actually, it's not so simple. You can be Mivatal in Avodah Zarah. It's not so simple to be Mivatal Tashmish of Avodah Zarah, which is what the building would be. So Tosfos says that no, rather, those kinds of places, actual Bati Avodah Zarah will be destroyed. What do we mean by Taitios? For Kaukasos, we mean places where Goyim gather, for assemblies or whatever, or like the Aruch says, theaters and circuses. This that Tosfos is talking about over here, by the way, that they're saying that a place that was used for Avodah Zarah cannot afterwards be used for a shul or a bes medrash or all, is actually kind of controversial. The Magen Avraham talks about it in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. He says the Olam is noyig when it comes to churches, to turning churches into shuls. The Olam is noyig to be makel on it. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about it, where he says that lechatchila it's not really the right thing to do, in spite of that. But you know, but yeah, but if they put a lot of money into it and whatever, then fine. He says ideally what you should do is at least build it as a makom chol, don't build it as a shul, and afterwards we makdish it for a shul. That way at least it's not going directly from Avodah Zarah to being a shul. Lemaisa, I mean, we do see there's a number of shuls and a number of Chabad houses and the yeshiva in Morristown and another example that taka used to be churches or monasteries and whatever and were converted into shuls and yeshivas and whatever. So there definitely is reason to be master it, despite what Tosfos is saying over here. That's a whole different issue, selling a shul to, we'll have later in the Masechta, the whole dinim about selling a shul for Kwal, yeah, but that's a whole different issue, yeah.
The bottom line is that we should think that we should burn their churches to shuls rather than burn our shuls.
That is definitely true, but yeah, when it happens that you have a church that can be converted into a shul, you know, it's a good idea to ask a rabbi. Amar Rav Yitzchak, more identification of cities. Leshem Zupamyas, the city of Leshem, which the pasuk mentions in Shoftim, that the Shevet Dun originally was located approximately in the area of Tel Aviv, Bnei Brak, that area of nowadays. They found the land wasn't big enough for them, especially because the Canaanim were still occupying large parts of it. So therefore, they wound up traveling up to the north. They found the city of Leshem, and they conquered it and renamed it Dun, and made it their headquarters. Where is Leshem? Zupamyas. This Pamyas, which is nowadays called Banyas, it's one of the sources of the Yarden up north of the Kinneret. When it says Ekron to Akar, this pasuk that we mentioned before, that Ekron will be uprooted. Again, Zukesuri Bas Edom. This means Kesuri, the daughter of Edom, meaning the Roman city. Shehiyosim Metropolin Shomalachim. This was the metropolis of kings. Rashi says over here that metropolin actually means the mother of kings. Ima Shomalachim. How is it the mother of kings or metropolis, a mother city, whatever? Some say that it means because they would raise kings over there. Others say that they would appoint as kings people who lived in Caesarea, because it was an important place. Marsha says we're not talking about kings of, we're not necessarily talking about Roman emperors themselves. In fact, the Roman emperors for the Roman Empire for a long time, they didn't have a hereditary succession. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah criticizes them for it. So we're not talking about that they raised the heir to the throne in Caesarea. We're talking about the heirs to the thrones of other kingdoms nearby. They would send them to Caesarea because it was an important city, and they'd get an education there, and a Romanized education, whatever.
American
wings. Yeah, it would be the equivalent of nowadays sending them to Harvard or whatever. Yeah. Kesari of Yerushalayim, when it comes to the city of Kesari and the city of Yerushalayim, im yom lecha adam chor v'shtein, and if somebody tells you both of them are destroyed, al tamin, then don't believe it. Yosh v'shtein al tamin, if somebody tells you both of them are settled, both of them are flourishing. I mean, also al tamin. Chor v'kesari v'yosh v'yerushalayim, but if they tell you that Kesari is destroyed and Yerushalayim is settled, or chor v'yerushalayim v'yosh v'kesari, tamin, that you can believe. It's always one or the other. It's always a balance. Shanema, the pasuk says Imola Hachareva. This is a pasuk in Yechezkel that the city of Tzor is saying about Yerushalayim. I will be filled up by its destruction, which means Imaleazu Charevazu, Imaleazu Charevazu. If one is filled up, then the other one is destroyed, and vice versa. So therefore, the people of the Navi criticizes Tzor over there. How you talk them that you're happy over the fact that Yerushalayim was destroyed, and you're thinking now we're going to flourish. You're eventually going to be destroyed also.
So do you agree for Yerushalayim to go? The Edom is going to have to be destroyed.
Well, that's what we were just talking about, Edom being the Tartarus and Tartarus being destroyed. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Hacha, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I have a different pasuk that says the same idea. Ul oim yamach. The Navi Shem says to Rivka, one nation between Yaakov and Esau, one will always be stronger than the other. So you never have both of them up at the same time. What does it mean? It says there's a pasuk in Yeshaya that goes like this: Yuchan Rasha, let the Rasha be favored. Bal lomad tzedek, he has not learned justice. And what does that mean? Amar Yitzchak lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Yitzchak says to the Eibusher Ribono Shel Olam, Yuchan Esav, shouldn't Esav be favored? Shouldn't he deserve some kind of favor? One of the Mefarshim says is actually what Yitzchak is asking is the same way as Yishmael did Shuvah while Abraham was alive. Won't you give Esav the chance also to do tshuva? Amalai, the Eibusher says, can't. Rasha. You're asking Yuchan? No, Rasha. He's a Rasha. Amalai, so Yitzchak says, okay, Bal Lamad Tzedek. There's nobody available who can be Malamad Tzchus on him. Or Marshall says, it's not a question, but a statement. Baal Lamed Tzedek. Poor Esav. He never learned Tzedek. He never learned Torah properly. You can't hold him. You can't hold it against him that he did have Eretz. He doesn't know better.
But he made it one piece of Kibbutz Avraham.
Yeah, that's actually one. That's actually some of the Poshim say that's also part of what Yitzchak is asking about him. Yeah. That the Marshal says that Yitzchak is making a statement. Baal Lamed Tzedek. Esav never learned Torah.
Right.
So you can't hold it against him that he did have Eretz.
Yeah,
he did it for Shogeg, effectively.
Say, was more than ever in Yaakov. But he didn't work for the Minos.
Right, okay, but yeah, I mean, they learned together in Cheder, we learned, but whatever, Esav didn't learn when he got older. So, Amalai, so the Ebesha tells him, still, it's not, you can't just consider him a Shogu. The Eretz Nechoychet Ya'avel, in the land of uprightness, he'll do injustice, which means, in other words, Rashi says, in the future, the B'nai Esav are going to destroy Eretz Yisrael, they're going to destroy the Beis Mikdash. Specifically, why are we calling it Nechoychos? Mepharshim say, because we learned in Tainus that there's a Yerushalayim Shalmaila and there's a Yerushalayim Shalmata directly opposite it. Noichach means opposite. So the Eretz Nechoychos, and land is directly opposite, there's a corresponding land in Shemaim, Ya'avel is going to do injustice. He's going to destroy the Beis Mikdash. Yeah. Amaloi, so Yitzchak says, okay, you're right. In that case, I give up. Imkein, Baal Yira, as the pasuk finishes off. Baal Yira, Geirus Hashem. Fine, okay, then he should not see the power, he should not see the glory of Eivishta. You're right, he doesn't deserve to have any schos if he destroys the Beis Mikdash. That's a whole different issue. Sometimes we say that, and sometimes we say that we do. We talked about this a little bit in Rosh Hashanah in connection with Yishmael.
Yeah.
A lot of different explanations. Is the person himself guilty of this kind of aveda? Himself, Yishmael wasn't guilty of making the Jewish people thirsty, making Yitzchak thirsty. Whereas in this case, Esav was already harassing Yaakov and then threatening to kill him. So already he's the Eretz Nechoychet Ya'avel in a certain way. So there, yeah. So the similar kind of thing also anyway, that in Sanhedrin, the Gemara talks about, there's a number of the famous villains of Jewish history who ended up having Jewish descendants who became Gator. From Sisera came Rabbi Akiva, from Bnei Bonav Shalhamon, Limnu Torah, Bnei Brak.
A couple of Akiva?
Yeah, a couple of examples like that, and the Gemara mentions.
It's not the kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rabbi
Akiva,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of them is, the Gemara mentions over there, that the yeah. So one of them.
But it said Rabbi Akiva was the Mitaken, Shem ben Chamor.
Okay. No, that's not. No, Shem ben Chamor is Reb Chanani ben Tradion. He's part of the Rachmas Yadayim Lefnechem. Let's talk about it another time.
Shem ben Chamor, you know.
Yeah. It's brought in places anyway. No. So the Gemara says over there that the Eibishter thought to do the same thing for Nebuchadnezzar. One of his descendants maybe should become a ger and retroactively, you know, bring some schus to his ancestor. And then the Midas Adin argues to the Eibishter, how are you talking? Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis Mikdash. How can he possibly think that there's any kind of good in him? And Taka, the Eibishter says, okay, you're right. In that case, then he's a goner. So that's a similar thing we're saying over here about it. I mean, in practice, Esav did have good descendants. He had Antoninus, he had others, but, you know, we're talking about that Esav himself then doesn't deserve that kind of, but yeah.
But Esav destroyed the second descendants.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah.
So you think it's some game also?
No, that's what we're saying. That from some of the famous villains in Tanakh, came out famous some of the Chachamim. From Haman, from Sisera. From who else is there over there? I forget.
From Haman was.
From Haman, Limdutari Bnei Brak, yeah.
Yeah.
From some, no, not all the Chachamim.
Oh.
Somebody who taught Torah in Bnei Brak, and in a few places it brings that it was the Amor of Shmuel Bar Shilas. Anyway, the Amor of Yitzchak, my dichtiv. What does it mean? There's another pasuk. This is one in Tillim that says, "Al titin Hashem ma'avaye Rosh." Hashem, don't give. Don't give the Rasha his desires. Zmamay al tafik. Don't take out his zamam. Yorum usela, that they should be raised up forever. The simple meaning of zamam is what they're planning. But if that's the case, it's the same thing as ma'avaya Rasha. So what it means is Omer Yaakov of Nekarish Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shleilam al titin la Esav a Rasha tavasli. Right? Don't give Esav a Rasha what he desires. And zmamay al tafik, when it says don't take out his zamam, the Gemara is assuming over here, since we said that zamam can't mean just his desires, so it'll be the same as the previous thing, it means rather zamam can also mean, Rashi says, like an iron ring that's put into a camel's nose to control it. So what does that refer to? Zu gramamia shel Edom. This refers to Gramamia, which is the name of a kingdom descended from Edom. On the side over here, and how goes with the Unim, it brings that actually it may be not Gramamia, but Germania, Germany. That if they were to come out from their place, machriven kolam kolay, they would destroy the whole world. They did. But even actually in Roman times, as I was going to say now, the Romans and the Germans were constantly fighting with each other, and eventually the Romans did overrun the empire. And so that's the point. Topic. They were just saying like keep the nose ring in there to control them that they don't go out and destroy the whole world. Let me tell you about the Germania shel Edom, the German or whatever nation. Yeah. The Amr of Chama Bachanina, Tlas Meif Tiri Tagit. Germania would be some nation. That's some nation. That's the name of a nation descended from Edom. So Tlas Meif Tiri Tagit Ikeb Germania shel Edom. There are 300 people who wear crowns in Germania shel Edom. In other words, they have 300 top chiefs. The Tlas Meif Shitin Bachamisha Marzavni Ikeb Roim. And they have 365 chiefs, marshals, whatever you want to call them, in Rome. Every day these go out to fight against these. You know, the Romans and the Germanium or the Germans, or whatever, are always fighting with each other. Every time one of these leaders gets killed, and then they're busy appointing a new king, a new leader to replace the one who was killed in battle. So in other words, that keeps it. You know, they're busy fighting with each other. That drains off a lot of their energies that otherwise they would use to conquer even more of the world. Historically, that's exactly what happened. The Romans and the Germans had pretty much a standoff there for a good couple hundred years. Maral has a long explanation about why 300 and why 365. The gist of it, he says, is that Edom is connected with the sun. They get their power from the sun, and therefore 365 connected the days of the year. And 300, he explains also how it has to do with the sun, among others. The word Shemesh begins and ends with a shin.
Edom today is not the next thing.
Never heard that it is, but I don't know. Ten cents.
The German is still a monarch, no?
Yeah, that's as I document.
It's Okay.
Anyway. The Amr of Yitzhak, since we mentioned an example of the kind of thing where we say if somebody tells you one versus the other, don't believe them, we said about Kesari and Yerushalayim, so a similar one, Amr of Yitzhak, Im Yom Lachadav Yagaiti V'lo Matzasi, this is where the ninth of the 12th Sukkim comes from. If somebody tells you, I worked hard but I did not find my way in Torah, Al Tamin, don't believe him. Lo Yagaiti, if somebody says I did not work hard, or Matzasi, but I found it, Al Tamin. Yagaiti or Matzasi, but if he says I worked hard and I found, Tamin, that you can believe. Why are we calling it Matzasi? One reason, it says in a number of places in Chassidus, is because what you get from what you get from learning Torah, you get a lot more than the effort you put into it, a certain amount of effort. You get it milamayla, which is far beyond anything that you could possibly put in. So ultimately, it's like a Matzia, it's something that comes unexpectedly. This is talking about as far as Divrei Torah. But when it comes to business, when it comes to making parnasa, then no, not necessarily. Just with, you might have that person, your guy, etc. You have help from Hashem. So yes, you can have somebody who is your guy in business, or vice versa. You can have your guy Matzasi. And with Divrei Torah Layamoran El Chadudi, even in Divrei Torah, we're only talking about as far as becoming sharper, as far as getting a deeper understanding of what you're learning. Not you need your gaiti in order to have Matzasi. Aval Ukmi Girsa, but to retain your Girsa, that you don't forget what you learn, that is also Siyata Min Shmaya. That's also, you need Siyata Min Shmaya for that. So that you can sometimes have. You have a person that your gaiti and yet Vloy Matzasi, they still forget like what they learn, like it doesn't very obvious. You have a person who what he learned is very difficult for him, and so he ends up forgetting it. But even with that, I mean, what about that Talmud of Repreda who had to learn it 400 times, right? So even 101 times not necessarily a given. If you see a Rasha that the time is smiling for him, in other words, he's having good fortune, don't rate him on. Don't try to provoke him. Don't try to tangle with him. Shenema, as the pasuk says, al pischa b'mereim, as it says, don't pischa, don't become angry at b'mereim, against people who are doing bad. Yeah. And not only that, you should know there can be such a case that a Rasha is being very successful, also Drocha Matzlichim, that whatever he does is successful. Shenema Yachilu Drocha V'Choleis, as it says elsewhere in Tilim, his ways are successful at all times. Yachilu, Rashi says, means Yatzlichu. Not only that, you can have a Rasha who the time he's having such a run of good fortune that even he's Zoicha in Din, that the Eibishter treats him leniently when it comes to judging him. Your mishpatim, your judgments are morim, they're lifted away from in front of him. Eventually he'll be punished in Olam Haba. Right now in Olam Haba he's getting sky for whatever mitzvahs he did. And not only that, you can even have the Rasha may even be able to see the downfall of his enemies. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, and they're in Tilim, Kol Tzor of Yafiach Behem. All of his enemies, he blows at them, and like he blows, and they fall down. So therefore, Rabbi Yitzchok is saying, when you see a Rasha is in a situation like that where he's being very successful, don't tangle with him. Because you never know. The Eibishter is giving him a run of good fortune right now to punish him L'Olam Haba. So you may not be successful against him. Is that so? You are allowed to tangle with Rishayim in this world. Shenem, the pasuk says, "Oiz veTorah yahalu Rasha." Those who abandon the Torah praise the Rasha. Rishayim veTorah yisgarabam, but those who keep the Torah will provoke them. We'll go and fight against them. Britannia, and we also learn in a Braiser, of the Stoibra by Mosunoimer, Mutul is Garis by Rashayim by Lamaze, you're allowed to tangle with, you're allowed to start up with Rashayim in this world. And Vim Lochshach Adam Loimar, and if somebody whispers to you, what about that? It says in the Pasuk, Al Tischa Bamreim, Al Tchane Ba'Oise Avla. We just quoted the pasuk. Don't get angry at the evildoers. Don't be jealous. Don't provoke the ones who are doing evil. So then you see you're not allowed to. Rabbi Desoy says, don't worry. Mishal ibn Noikfayim, okay? You know who says something like that? You know who quotes the pasuk and explains it like that? Somebody whose heart is afraid. Somebody who has Averis, and therefore they're nervous because of their Averis, they may not be successful. What does it really mean? El al tischa b'mereim means liyas k'mereim. The word al tischar, besides meaning angry, can also mean to compete against. So it means don't compete with them, meaning liyas k'mereim. Don't compete trying to be like them. Don't be jealous of the ones who are doing evil, meaning don't be jealous of what they're doing and I want to do like them, liyas k'oisa avla. But to tangle with them, to start up with them, that you can do. That's what Rabbi Desai is saying, but that's the question. That's the Gemara's question over here, is we seem to have a contradiction. First, we're saying that Alpha's got it. Rabbi Yitzchok is saying Alpha's got it, but Rabbi Desai is saying, go ahead. But Omer, and also Rabbi Desai says, there's another pasuk that says, Al yikani libcha b'chatoyim v'gomer, your heart should not be jealous of the chatoyim. The pasuk continues, Kiim v'yiras Hashem kalayoyim. Now, obviously, there it doesn't mean don't be jealous of them, as in don't start up with them, because then what does v'yiras Hashem have to do with it? It means don't be jealous to try and follow them. Rather, you should stick to v'yiras Shemayim. So you see from that al tekaneh ba'isavla means to be jealous to try and follow in their ways, but not as far as starting up with them. Do you have a contradiction? Do you start up with the Rishayim in this world or not? Well, there's a few possibilities. Loikasha, haba mila didei, haba mila dishmaya. Answer number one. One is talking about in personal matters. The other is talking about in mila dishmaya, in matters involving Yiddishkeit. When it comes to your personal matters, yes, if the Rasha is successful, don't start up with him. But when it comes to Mila Dishmaya, if he's making fun of or harassing people who are keeping Torah and doing mitzvahs, by all means, even if he, no matter how successful he is, you've got to stand up to him. Or answer number two, both of them are talking about personal affairs. One's talking about a tzaddik gomer. He's a tzaddik gomer, so he can afford to do this. There's not a chance that he's going to succumb to the Rasha. His chosim will overpower the Rasha. But tzaddik sheina gomer, as opposed to a tzaddik sheina gomer, should take Rabbi Yitzchak's advice and not tangle with him because he might not have enough chosim. The Amar of Huna, my dichti, what does it mean? There's a pasuk that says, Lama tabit boidim, why the Nabi Chavakuk says to the Eibishter, why do you look on at the boidim, at the treacherous ones, the traitors? Tachrish, you're quiet. Kavala Rasha, tzaddik mimenu, when the Rasha swallows up someone who is a greater tzaddik than him. Which implies tzaddik mimenu b'leia. The Rasha may swallow up somebody who's only more of a tzaddik than he is. In other words, a tzaddik shein a gomer. Tzaddik gomer ain't a b'leia, but he's not going to be able to swallow up the tzaddik gomer. So therefore, yes, the tzaddik gomer can afford to start up with the Rasha. Tachrish means you're quiet. The vala Rasha tzaddik mimenu. When the Rasha is swallowing up somebody who's more of a tzaddik than him. And in context over there, Habakkuk is complaining, Haitochen, that you're giving over the Jewish people into the hands of the Babylonians, the Kassim, which, you know, the Jewish people may not be doing that great, but the Babylonians are a lot worse. Or another possibility, Shama Sachekes Leishayim. It's different when the Rasha is having an exceptional run of good fortune. This that we're talking about, Milad Shmaya, Milad Alma, etc., when he's having a real run of good fortune, even then, even if you're a Tzadik Gomer, maybe you should hold off. As opposed to, if it's Ein Shama Sachekes Leishayim, then you can afford to. Right. 9:40 now, so I guess we'll have to continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem.